Hello and welcome to Additive Insight, the original additive manufacturing podcast and your source for news, interviews and comment on the latest 3D printing and additive manufacturing intelligence. Brought to you by TCT Magazine. I'm your host, Sam Davis, and today I'm joined by Plastimetric CTO Jimmy Campbell to discuss the company's PIP testing technology. Throughout our conversation, Campbell explains how PIP testing works to obtain stress strain curves of materials, how the technology can be applied to advanced parameter optimization and materials development, and what the company has learned from its work with the likes of NASA and Leonardo helicopters. We also discuss how simulation and AI are impacting the quality control space. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For more additive insight, head on over to tctmagazine.com, where you can subscribe to the print edition of TCT Magazine and our weekly Additive Insight newsletter for free. Jimmy, welcome to the Additive Insight podcast. First, before we get into the rest of the conversation about PIP testing and how the technology works, could you tell me a little bit about your background first and then explain the background of Plastimetric as a company?
Sure. So first of all, thanks for having me on today. Great to be here and share a little bit more about our mechanical testing devices. In terms of background about myself, my history, if you like, is intimately linked with that of Plastimetric. So my PhD was in extraction of mechanical properties from indentation data. So the research group that I was in at Cambridge had been working on this kind of problem for around 5 years before I joined. And my PhD started out looking at something called creep deformation. So deformation as a function of time. And as it progressed, we then moved on to plasticity, so looking at stress strain curves of metals. So users might be familiar with things like yield stress and ultimate tensile strength, and how we could get those from a simple indentation-based test, which, you know, we'll talk about in detail today. So I did my master's and PhD in that group under the supervision of Professor Bill Klein. And at the end of 2018, we thought we potentially had something that could be commercialized. So we set about getting some initial funding to support development of a product. So we kind of had the scientific background, if you like, at the time. We'd published quite a lot in scientific journals, and then we set about the journey of making a product out of it. So from the end of 2018 through to 2020, we were developing prototypes, going out to potential customers, early customers, and testing out those prototypes, and then trying to secure more funding to allow us to grow further as a company. So in 2020, we were delighted to receive funding from a company called Element, who are a global testing, inspection and certification company. And that allowed us to set up our headquarters. We're still based here on the Cambridge Science Park. And from then, we've really developed the technology and also our product portfolio. So that was, I say, almost 4 years ago now that we moved in here, which seems like it's flown by. And now we have three or four different products out on the market. We have a global customer base, and now I head up the technical team here. So I say my history is intimately linked with the company, going back around a decade or so.
Okay, perfect. And obviously you and your colleagues that make up the rest of the team, there's expertise there in material science, computational modeling, scientific programming. Can you explain, I guess, between you all, what challenges as a collective you have identified in terms of testing parts and components?
Yeah, so I think in our kind of academic period of my career during my PhD, there's a lot of interest in indentation methods to determine properties of structures. So a lot of the focus has been on nano indentation or very, very fine scale testing. And, you know, I spent a non-insignificant amount of time on those kind of machines. But we we came to realize there were fundamental issues, if you like, with doing testing on such a fine scale. You're typically probing just a single grain, so the response of a single grain, which can't be simply related to the bulk properties, like, for example, a tensile test, which is, of course, one of the tests that people are most interested in, the outcomes, the results. It's widely used as a quality check for product that is made. So from the academic side, we come from a space where there was a lot of interest in nano indentation. And then as we explored, if you like, the more industrial applications, it was clear that there were limitations of tensile testing. So you need quite a large dog bone coupon. You need to machine it. That often takes time. There are issues in terms of just delays between different, it might be the lab who you're waiting on the results for, or maybe it's the machining you're waiting for. There was clearly an issue in terms of the time to result that people were facing. So the product that we've come up with combines all of those different people that you've talked about. So we are very strong in material science. So we have a lot of material scientists with very deep metallurgy understanding. Our products, as we've come to, are kind of fundamentally based on a lot of fine element analysis. So a lot of computational work goes in there, and also advanced numerical algorithms, how we go from what we measure on the machine to a result in just a few seconds. So how that all adds up, I guess, into testing of parts, especially when you look at additive, you typically have witness coupons. We're not always certain that they are representative of the part themselves, because they might have undergone a slightly different thermal history than the witness coupon versus a part. The thermal history might be slightly different. And also the properties of the part may vary as a function of, it might be the position, it might be the printing parameters. Maybe you have different parameters for upskin or downskin, and that can affect the cooling conditions and therefore the properties. So I think if we look specifically at additive, those issues are almost perfectly aligned with what our product can offer. So doing an indentation-based test in a small localized region, which is very quick, would address those time issues, but it would also give you the insights that maybe the conventional tech, the tensile test, doesn't or struggles to give you at this point.
You mentioned at the end there a couple of the benefits of what Plastimetrix is bringing to market. Can you explain then, I guess, the testing technology, the PIP testing technology, how that works, and I guess the typical process of that testing, of that workflow?
Sure. So as you said, the testing we call PIP testing now. We've gone through a few iterations of what we should call it. So we call it profilometry-based indentation plastometry. So you can see very clearly why we decided to call that PIP testing. So let's touch on each of those areas. So indentation is an indentation-based test, and we use a spherical indenter to create. So it's a hard spherical indenter, which creates an indent in the surface of the material. Now, typically, we use a 1 millimeter radius indenter, and we penetrate about 100 to 200 microns into the surface. So you leave an indent that is about 1 millimeter in diameter. So plastometry refers to, it's a word for effectively just determining the properties of metals. And then the start of the name is profilometry based. So what we do is we create that indent with the spherical indenter. We then measure the profile of that indent. So we're using a sphere. So the inside of the indent is forced to be effectively spherical. And then there's a region around the lip called the pileup region. And that gives you a lot of information about exactly how the deformation has taken place, or if there is a lot of work hardening in the material, which might mean a big difference between yield stress and ultimate tensile stress, or if there's very little. So if the yield and ultimate are very close to each other. So we take that profile, and then what we do is we run simulations of the exact same test in the background. So we have a model that is, it goes to the same peak load as the experiment. And what we can do is effectively guess the properties in that model. And the model then produces the shape of the indent, the predicted shape of the indent, which will have the depth and that spherical inner portion and then the pileup region. And we can then compare, how does that match with our experiment? Now, it might be that in that first guess, it doesn't match particularly well. So we can then iteratively improve those properties by moving through different combinations of yield stress and hardening behavior until the match between model and experiment is very good. And then at that point, you know, once the match is, they're almost indistinguishable, we can be confident in the properties that we're predicting. So out of a test, we will predict the full stress strain curve, including yield stress, hardening behavior, up till the ultimate tensile strength.
Coming on to the product portfolio, you have products kind of in lab testing, in field testing, and high temperature testing. Can you take us through that product portfolio and explain, I guess, what the capabilities of each are?
Yeah, so as I said, I guess the main output of any test is a stress strain curve. So comparable with that you get from tensile testing. So our kind of product portfolio has kind of evolved. So we had originally the lab-based machine. So, you know, very similar to what people are used to doing with their universal test frame, pulling a tensile test, you can have the same, or you can have our machine, which does an indentation-based test and gives you the same data. So yield stress, ultimate tensile strength, just in the lab. That process takes around 5 minutes. So from clicking start, effectively, we will create the indent, we'll then scan the shape of that profile. And as I mentioned, we go from that profile to predicting the stress strain curve in just a few seconds. So the whole process itself for the lab-based machine takes around 5 minutes. We do require a little bit of preparation before we start the test. So typically just a surface grind, for those familiar with metallography, a P1200 grind is what we recommend before you start, generating a smooth flat surface. So that's the benchtop machine. And then we launched that in 2020. And on the back of customer feedback from our current customers, if you like, back in 2020, and prospective customers, we were taking their kind of advice and guidance on what next product we should build. So we had a lot of feedback on, you know, just making the testing either easier to do or more simple, which we could maybe build into our software. But one of the real highlights that came through was high temperature testing. So what we did was we went away and designed a high temperature module. So we call that the PLX hot stage, which it's a module that attaches into our lab based device. It can test up to materials up to 800 degrees C. So just on the lab bench there, you can have testing performed up to those kind of temperatures. And again, you know, if you look in kind of the additive space, there's maybe been a lot of development to get room temperature properties to the kind of level which are comparable with Raught. There's very little data out there on additive materials at high temperature because of the, you know, the costs involved in getting such data. So again, just making that data accessible on the bench for our customers. And then in the kind of parallel world that we work in the portable testing field. So this is not currently geared towards additive, but there is legislation in the United States about testing of oil and gas pipelines. So unfortunately, because of some accidents that happened on pipelines where they ruptured and exploded, there is now legislation to improve the monitoring of the assets in the field. So the legislation mandates that people will go out and test their pipelines up to every 1 mile. And so these are typically low carbon steel pipes. I say not much. There are welds typically in them, but that's about as close as we get to additive. But we've designed a product that can go out there in the field and measure the properties of these pipes out there. And I think, you know, if we look kind of in the more medium to longer term, we do also see there's a potential opportunity there for qualifying of large structures made by, for example, WAM or DED type AM processes. And then finally, we've also built, to try and link all of our products up together, a digital platform that we call Plexus. So with our customers set approval, we will take all of the data from all of our machines and communicate it up to a cloud-based platform, say we call Plexus, and that takes all of that data and it stores it for our customers. So if you do a test in your lab, for example, and you want it accessible to your to another team, which may be working in a different either office or even in a different country, that data is immediately then available to all of your colleagues who have access to the platform. It can allow, like I say, data sharing, but also insights over time. And again, across all of our different products. So if you were to have multiple machines, different locations, they can all be gathered and then analyzed on this central platform. So we've tried to make, as far as possible, you know, our products easy to use, very fast. As I say, you can get from start of test to result in just a few minutes. Very simple to use. So, you know, just click go and the test is fully automated, but also really insightful. So we talked, and we will talk, I'm sure, a little bit more about the mapping capabilities in AM. We really want to give our users actionable data that either, you know, they're getting more easily than they could do previously, or data they simply couldn't generate without our equipment.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you talked about the speed of the process and the, you know, the testing workflow. In terms of the accuracy of the results of those tests, how would you compare them to, say, a kind of tensile coupon test? You know, what have you seen so far, you know, in the years that you've had this product out there, in terms of a comparison against what organizations were doing previously?
Yeah, so I think where we are right now, we will, for now, always be compared in terms of accuracy against the gold standard, which is a, you know, a tensile bar typically done to ASTM E8, for example. And what we say is we would typically be within 10% of the values on yield stress and tensile strength for, you know, when we're comparing directly with E8. But in the vast majority of cases, we're actually within 5%. So we've now got a database that is amassed to almost 1,000 that we've comparisons that we've generated internally and with our customers and through technical trials of the product. And that data is now available on our website. So for anyone listening who'd like to see, you know, the performance on maybe it's 6,000 series aluminium or printed nickel 718, that is now all available on our website. So, just to put a bit of context around those numbers, if you look at the ASTM E8 standard, for example, and you look at the round robin data, when you're within 5%, you are starting to approach the kind of variation you might see from a typical tensile test, whether it be within the lab or lab to lab variation. So we think that's pretty good. And I say we've got a growing customer base who agrees with us on that.
I wanted to touch on a few of the applications of PIP testing. You know, parameter optimization, quality control, material development. If we start with parameter optimization, how does the technology tackle that application? And I guess how does a user read and understand the data to help, you know, optimize parameters? You know, mapping of material properties is another. How, talk to me about using PIP testing for those certain applications.
Yeah, so I think if we look at parameter development, how it might classically be done, you know, at the moment, you would take your powder. So if we stick to kind of laser powder bed fusion as the example, you take your powder and then you have some idea of the printing window. You might vary different parameters to vary your energy density, and then you'd print a test block, if you like. Maybe it's 10 by 10 different blocks with different laser settings in those different areas. And then the first thing you would do is assess the density. So you maybe would take Archimedes, or I think more commonly people would use optical density, and they'd simply look and say, you know, what is the density of my part? And you down select from there to say, okay, these ones are our highest density, and therefore we'll proceed with these parameters. And the next step might be to do a full build. Okay, maybe you do some hardness testing in between and get a rough estimate of how hard each cube is. And then you would make big builds, which would comprise, you know, tensile bars, all different sorts of tests that you're going to do for this parameter set. So what the PIP technology allows is for you to bring that mechanical test information into the process much more easily at an earlier stage. So you can take those density cubes and you can perform PIP tests on all of those cubes, assuming that the density is high enough. So we say typically above 99%, you will get reliable results. But of course, you would probably only proceed with density cubes that are higher than 99% anyway. So you do a pip test on all of those and you get those insights about how your mechanical property strength is varying much earlier in the process, rather than getting a rather unwanted surprise when you build, take much larger builds, start doing tensile tests and realize that you haven't maybe met the criteria with which you need to. And we've just released, so it is on our website, a case study on exactly this, where we looked with our friends and colleagues at Additive Manufacturing Solutions, which is run by Rob Hyam, who's formerly of Airbus. We printed a whole set of density cubes on an SLM 500, and we went through the exact process I've just described, and we showed some really interesting variations of yield stress and tensile strength as a function of two things, energy density, but also layer thickness. So obviously those two things are linked, but what we showed was you could get equivalent mechanical properties from using a different energy density, but a larger layer thickness. So what you could do is effectively get the same mechanical response, but you could reduce your print time by having thicker layers. So that one, I'll say, is online if anyone would like to have a deeper read there.
And then materials development was another interesting application. Can you explain how pip testing can potentially kind of, you know, advance the development of materials? And obviously that in additive manufacturing, that's often a talking point in terms of the available materials for users. Talk to me about how your technology can help with developing materials.
Yeah, it's very similar actually to the kind of the value proposition in the parameter development. Not having to have tensile bars to get those yield stress and tensile strength values means that you can do much more development earlier in the process, and you can iterate through those much more quickly. So, you know, take that material development. If you're looking at, for example, if you start really from the top and you don't even know what composition you're going to have, maybe you use a DED type process to print a compositional gradient. And up to this point, you know, people may have done some hardness tests across that gradient and get kind of a rough estimate, if you like, of, you know, how hard's the material, what are we kind of expecting in these different regions. Now, if you simply replace the hardness test with a pip test, you get much more actionable values, you know, yield stress as a function of composition, for example. And, you know, that mapping, you know, you could do it in that sense on material development as a function of composition, but you also, you know, have to be aware, like we mentioned at the start, that, you know, as you go through a part, your properties may vary just because of the different cooling conditions in different regions. So we've seen a couple of examples now where, you know, we've had tests that we do close to the build plate where, you know, there's a very large thermal mass there, so the cooling rate is quicker. As you go up the build volume, you've got all the insulating powder, the thermal kind of the routes for dissipation of heat are now much more limited, and so your cooling rate may, if you keep the parameters the same, may start to the cooling rate may get a lot lower, and therefore your properties end up being slightly different in different regions of the part. So again, for those people who are particularly interested, we had a case study with Alloyed over in Oxford, where we looked at for an automotive part. First of all, you know, how much did the part properties vary within that single part? And it was up to 20% variation we saw across this part. And also, how did that then compare with the witness coupons? And again, we saw about 15% variation from what the witness coupon was telling us to what was actually present within the part itself.
As well as the likes of Alloyed and Additive Manufacturing Solutions, obviously Plastimetrics has worked with NASA, Morph 3D, MIT, Leonardo Helicopters. What can you tell us about how some of these organizations have applied pip testing so far?
Sure, yeah, so at NASA, we've been doing some rapid assessment of high temperature properties. So that is on an alloy called C103. So it's a niobium alloy, often used in rocket nozzles because it does have very good thermal stability in terms of its properties over a very high temperature range. So they've been using that to do just rapid assessment of those mechanical properties up to, as I say, 800 degrees C for our hot stage module. At Morph 3D, so Morph 3D, for those who don't know, are now part of Nikon. And they work very closely, of course, with them, and they do a lot of printing as a service. So they offer PIP testing to their customers, but also they've been very supportive in our journey of standardization. So they've been doing a lot of testing to kind of show the efficacy of the method, and also providing materials for things like round robin testing, as we just talked about for tensiles, to support us in our standardization journey to establish PIP testing as a standard test method for AM metallics. So that's something that, say, we are pursuing now very strongly, and we hope to have a standard out there sometime in 2025. So that's pretty exciting for us, and we're very grateful to Morph3D there for their support. Leonardo are using the tool really to support, to add extra data to their quality processes. So of course, as a helicopter manufacturer, they have very set processes for how they need to qualify their particular parts. They are adding PIP testing to that to get even more data about their metals, to give them, you know, even more peace of mind about the properties that they have. And they're a particularly forward-looking company as well. So they've supported us. Again, we had a Materials Innovation Day hosted by ourselves and Leonardo last year, as we look to push this technology for aerospace and defense industry, you know, to their supply chain to support, you know, more innovation through the supply chain, but also, you know, higher quality products.
Okay. And what would you say Blastermetrics as a company has learned from working with these kinds of clients, and as an add-on to that, you know, from the conversations I've had with OEMs and suppliers of technology, manufacturers are quite demanding and they're always asking for more. So what, in terms of feedback, have you had from users in terms of developing on top of what you already have?
Yeah, so I think one of the key bits of feedback we've had from our customers directly is they enjoy working with us because of the level of scientific support that we get. So as I said at the start, you know, we really have a great team of material scientists here who can, you know, we are, I don't want to say forced, but we are capable of supporting customers across a huge range of metallurgy. So, you know, we're not only supporting customers with how best to deploy our technology, but we are also, you know, experts in a huge range of different alloys, say compositions. Even, you know, we have to work from the kind of basics. You might have an aluminium 6000 series, and then later that day we have a customer asking us about high entropy alloys, so we have to work across that whole range of metallurgy, and I say that's one thing that our customers really value. We're very transparent with the data that we get, so, you know, all of the data that is generated on the machine is immediately available to the user. And to give you one example of where we've kind of responded to customer needs, though we are not huge fans of typical hardness testing at Plastometrics, one of our customers said, well, you've effectively got a spherical indenter. Could we not do a Brinel test on the machine? So we have added that as an extra data point that users can gather on every single test. So you get your hardness data, but also your PIP stress strain curve just from a single location. And we're very transparent about the method. So we think that it's important for our users to, you know, if they would like to really understand the science of what's gone into the process. So we also host every year a short course. So last year we had attendees from places like Babcock and Airbus and other kind of industry heavyweights in their respective, whether it be aerospace or defense or automotive sectors, coming to really understand, you know, how is it applied, best practices, other things you might want to be aware of when deploying the technology. You know, we try and be as transparent as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. In terms of what we've learned, so as I mentioned, the hot stage was almost a direct, it was a customer request. You know, they said either we can't deploy the technology without the hot stage, or it would be a great addition. So we've added that. We are looking at things like completely automating the testing workflow. So at the moment, you can complete a single test in an automated fashion, but our customers are requesting, could we maybe do several tests? So, you know, again, maybe you're looking at property variation along the Z direction. If you wanted to do 10 tests on a bar that went up the Z direction, can we do that in an automated fashion with a moving stage? So it's something we're looking into. And I think one thing that I'd say in general, the industry, I know, Pete, you might say in general, manufacturers are demanding. But I think we've been really fortunate in terms of the relationships that we've developed and the level of collaboration that we've had with our customers. You know, we are still a fairly young company. We are very innovative at our heart, and we're trying as much as we possibly can to listen to our customers, what are their requirements, and then bring that into our products. And I think on that side, we've been fortunate that we found a lot of people who've been open and willing to guide us in our kind of journey, especially in the additive space. You know, it's a growing, maturing sector, and we've developed a lot of relationships that I think have really aided our product and also our messaging on how to deploy it in specifically in the additive sector.
I wanted to ask you about the maturity, I guess, of the additive manufacturing space. Plastimetrics obviously works across a few different industries. So what's your perspective, I guess, on the progress that additive manufacturing is making and how it is maturing?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, because I think, you know, our use cases in additive are really maturing, if you like, as the industry itself is. So you know, if we go back to when we founded the company, our view on additive was well, it's, you know, it hasn't really exploded. We haven't seen it. Now, okay, we were very much in the academic sphere, and probably the quality of product that's being produced is too brittle, really, for people to start considering using our type of tool. But actually, what we've seen over the last 4 years is a real shift in, and I don't think I'm saying anything necessarily new, but a real shift in that R&D to production kind of landscape. So initially, you know, a lot of our customers were academics or heavily focused on R&D, using the tool in things that we talked about, parameter development, alloy development, etc. But we're now starting to support more, if you like, serial production QA testing in areas like space, aerospace, or medical devices. So we're working with RMS company over in the US, who are a manufacturer of medical devices. And, you know, to give you a flavor of what they have to do, they have to pull a lot of tensile bars for every single build that they create. And the tensile bar might be 100 millimeters tall, but the medical device might only be 15 millimeters tall. So you have to sacrifice a lot of time and time cost, but also, you know, you have to think, how relevant is that tensile bar if it's, you know, 100 millimeters tall relative to these small devices that are only 15 or 20 millimeters tall? Are they actually assessing the same types of properties? So working very closely with them to try and remove those kind of barriers while still ensuring that the product is safe to go out there on the market. And we've also seen adoption in deployable spaces as well. So, you know, using additive in a deployable setting, so you've got rapid manufacture, but also rapid testing and qualification. So, you know, we've really seen, I would say, it's, you know, there's still a lot of R&D going on out there. There's no doubt about that. And I think that will likely continue. But there's certainly a significant portion that is maturing to enable actual serial production. And I say that's in our customer base. We're seeing that now, you know, where our technology is being deployed is starting to shift.
And another question I wanted to ask was about simulation technologies. I guess, we have a sister website called MQ, and through that we often speak to companies like yourselves who are in that kind of testing and quality assurance space, as well as companies that are working with simulation technologies. So I wanted to kind of understand from your perspective how they compare and how they complement what your PIP testing technology does. I guess thinking that, you know, some often suggest that, you know, if you simulate at the start of the process, there's less need to test at the end. So talk to me about, I guess, your take on that, and I guess the importance of A, testing at the end to obviously quality assure what you've done, but I guess B, how the two technologies can work together.
It's a really interesting question, because also we sit across both of them, really. So of course, yeah, we are doing a physical test, but this kind of core, if you like, of our technology really is based on simulation. So we kind of sit across both of those, which is interesting. I think there's some talk in the industry, and I attended a kind of panel session on looking at qualification using simulation back at ICAM last year. That's the ASTM ICAM conference, and it was at the end, people did always come back to testing, like you say, the final spot check. You can do all the simulation you would like, but you do need to then validate it at the end with an actual physical test. So I think we're seeing widespread adoption of things like digital twins, which can help to assess integrity of a part once it's gone into service. But then you also have in situ monitoring during production, which people use that data as an input for their models to try and assure that yes, when we've created this part based on the in situ monitoring that we have, we can model that and say this is going to be a good part, and therefore there's no defects or similar. And I think you're preaching to the converted to some extent, but our data can also be used to feed those kinds of models as well. So some of the data that you might need to input into maybe an FE calculation or similar would be the yield stress and the hardening. And that is the kind of data that you can get very quickly out of one of our machines. So I think we're going to see more and more of it over the next 10 years, as computing power grows, and there's been a lot of hype around NVIDIA's share price going through the roof. So there's no doubt we're going to see more of that. But I think I agree, certainly to some extent, that the final cross-check will always end up being some form of testing. And it might be educated by what you've seen in your models, but it will still involve some kind of quality test at the end.
Yeah, sure. I wanted to ask about AI as well. I think certainly when we talk about, some of the things that you've just mentioned there, like digital twins, and manufacturers like to be able to kind of bake in machine learning modules into all of that stuff. So I was wondering, considering there's a bunch of hype around AI at the moment, what impact, if any, you see AI having in the kind of part testing space?
So I think, like you say, it's going to come. There is absolutely no doubt, and there are already companies in the additive sector using AI to do things like trying to speed up parameter development. And, we're talking with quite a few of them because one of the inputs to their models might be to get data such as the ones that we can provide. So I think there's no doubt that it's going to have an impact in every area of business. And like I said, with things like in situ monitoring, almost one of the only ways you can handle all of the data that comes out of something like that is by using AI. So I think it's certainly going to take a more prominent role. And I think one very interesting question is how might that be standardized across the industry? So as I mentioned, we're trying to standardize the PIP technique. I sit on the additive technologies F42 committee at ASDM. One interesting question would be, how are we going to standardize across all these different providers of AI technologies, how we handle this masses of data? And I know there's a lot of work going into kind of the data side in the committee. So as I say, I think it will definitely be a part of part qualification in the future, and it will certainly remain a part of day-to-day life. I'm sure everyone out there is using it for things, the repetitive tasks, which aren't quite part qualification, but might be writing job descriptions or LinkedIn post or similar. I'm sure we've all done it. So we'll continue to see it, I think, more and more over the next decade.
Finally, Jimmy, and thank you so much for taking the time today. What would you say is next for Plastimetrics as a business? Obviously, throughout our conversation today, you've referenced a bunch of things that you and the company are working on. What do you see coming down the track in the next 12 months, 24 months?
Okay, so if we look very short term, we've just announced a partnership with Renishaw, which we're super pleased with. We've done a lot of work with them on validating the technology, and also we have a case study looking at the variation in properties due to heat treatment. So in the very short term, that is something that I'm super excited about. And then as we look forward, We're really trying to listen to those customers in additive to understand what do they need from our products more. How can we, you know, how can we deploy them more widely? So one of those, as I mentioned, probably is standardization, and you know, build a new range of products that will really fit their needs, whether that be automated sample mapping or similar. In our other world of the portable testing, that product is being launched this year. So everyone is very excited about that, and we'll be delivering machines into the US. Well, by the time the podcast is out, they will be out there in use. So everyone's excited about that. And, you know, we'll continue to grow our customer base. We're currently in all continents apart from Antarctica. I don't think we'll make it as far as Antarctica, but we can hope, and keep supporting, you know, customers in getting that mechanical testing property data quickly, in a very simple manner, and allowing them to then free up, you know, their time to do other things, not just pull tensile bars.